This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. Also by BlackStarLabs.com. You can save 10% on every order when you use the code FIT10 in the coupon section at checkout. And also by RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. High octane corrective exercise and performance enhancement at RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 110. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and first off, we have a man on Skype by the name of Toner Gentlecore. He is not on the cell phone. He is from GentlecoreTraining.com and the Boston Herald Step Up blog. What's up, Tony?
What's going on? It only took me 20 minutes, but I got it done.
Yes, it only took 20 minutes, and there were some other shenanigans during that time as well. And that also included Jonathan Fass of acceleratedstrength.com and also jonathanfass.blogspot.com. What's up, John?
Nothing. Hello, everybody.
Yes, John is watching football, so if he screams very loudly during the show, it's because one of his fantasy guys scored a touchdown. And then there is Lee Peel of avidityfitness.net. That's 3 weeks in a row I've gotten that correct. So, Lee, give me some love.
I have mad love.
Thank you. So we're all here together this week. We got an interview coming up with Brad Pilon of EatStopEat.com coming up at the end of the show, so stick around for that. But we're going to start off with some quick FitCast notes and news things. First off, the FitCast Insider, we're going to extend it until Friday just because some people emailed me saying they're getting paychecks this week and they want to wait on that. So I'm just going to extend it to Friday. There won't be like a hard time. But after that, we're going to have to take it down due to something that we're only going to tease if people have been watching me on Twitter. There's a kind of a project that's going on in the background that we're going to tease, and that's all I'm going to say. So let's start off with the mailbag. We got a couple voicemails. If you want to send in voicemails, you can send them to 978-633-3488 and leave a message for the voicemail box. We're going to jump to our first voicemail, and that is about Greens Plus and mixing it with juice and also red tea. So let's listen to that.
Hey, guys. This is Andy from New Jersey. I'm calling to leave you a voicemail for hopefully the next show. I have a couple questions that are sort of diet-related. First one came up when I was listening to the last podcast about juices and brought to mind the fact that the only way I can take Greens Plus is actually by mixing with orange juice. Maybe the alkaline in the Greens Plus kind of cancels out the acidity in the orange juice, and somehow the two together are kind of palatable. But that's kind of my first question is, what's your thinking on Greens Plus, you know, the whole superfood supplement type of thing? Is Greens Plus still the way to go, or is there anything else out there right now that you might recommend?
Okay, so let's answer that first part of the question first. I think we could just quickly run around the table and ask people if they use a green supplement or Greens Plus or superfood, anything like that. Let's start with Lee.
I do use a greens kind of supplement. I always look at green supplements and things like that. It's just a little bit of an extra additive insurance. There's not really too much study there's a little bit that shows that it could possibly do something, particularly with the uptake of the actual foods that you're eating. But it's a little bit of an insurance policy, nothing more. I don't really look at it as gospel. But I do utilize it. It's a supplement that I get around here pretty cheap. It's a cocoa flavored one that I use. It tastes really, really good in my shakes. So I toss it in.
Is it the chocolate one made by Greens Plus? Because John Berardi has teased us on the show about that they make like tons of great tasting Greens Plus flavors up in Canada, but we can't get them down here in the States.
It's Amazing Grass Superfood. That's what I use. It's called Amazing Grass Superfood, and there's a cocoa-flavored one, and it's delish. I actually tried the kids' one first by not realizing it was a kids' one, but that's a whole other story. But it was really good until I got the adult one. And anyway, yeah, it's really good. It's cocoa, and I use it. It's an additive. It's an insurance thing. It's just like just taking a multivitamin do something for me for sure that I know of. I don't know, but I do it anyway. And insurance, that's what I use it for.
Tony, what do you think? You actually, we can hit on that, and also the topic of mixing it with orange juice. You actually did a blog about orange juice on the Boston Herald Step Up blog, no longer sponsored by Reebok. And the we you and I both use superfood in our whether it be our during or post workout shakes or just somewhere else during the day, and that's for the stuff that's from Biotest. So, what do you think?
Lee and I tend to agree on a lot of things, and I like her mindset on stuff. I tend to be a little bit of a realist, and first and foremost, I think people need to be a little bit more cognizant of, just because you take Greens Plus or superfood doesn't mean that you shouldn't be eating your vegetables. But at the same time, totally agree with Lee in the sense that it's more of like a safeguard and a just kind of a nice little side benefit to have that stuff to put into your shakes. I definitely, me personally, I prefer superfood. I mean, I bought Greens Plus when, a few years ago. Just do not like the taste at all. It's just personal preference. I know Berardi has talked about super or not superfood, but Greens Plus. I think he did one of the episodes of the FitCast. He talked about it and how a lot of recent. I know there isn't a lot of research, but of the research that has done with it, it's a lot of positive results. But with superfood, I just I prefer the taste. It's not just algae and grass, but it's actually freeze-dried fruits and vegetables. So I just toss it into my post-workout drink or just like my morning shake, and I'm perfectly fine with that. So as far as putting in with orange juice, you know what? Like again, I'm a realist. I have no issues with people drinking orange juice. Although yes, I did blog about it earlier in the week and showing a research review that Lyle McDonald did about liquid calories and more particular artificial sweeteners or just sweetened beverages like soda, fruit juice, etc., and how humans tend to have a hard time compensating calories. Meaning, if they eat a whole food of 450 calories later, as opposed to a liquid meal of 450 calories, they're still gonna they have a hard time compensating in the sense that they're still probably gonna eat just as many more food if just as much food if not more later on in the day. So whereas if they ate a whole food meal, they tend to compensate and don't eat as much food later in the day. So I just thought it was an interesting little review. But as far as Greens Plus and superfood, I definitely prefer superfood.
Yeah, one of the great parts of superfood is that you don't have to choke it down. I found that I was able to mix it in my shakes, whether it be like I use it in my Ultra Peptide 2.0 shakes in the morning, and it just tastes like chocolate covered strawberries. I think one of the clients put it at CP about it, and the taste of Greens Plus is something that you really are going to have to probably just take down in a small shot of water. That's what I used to do in the past. How about you, John? What do you use for, or do you even use like a superfood product?
Yeah, no, I definitely do, and in fact, I have to run out and get some more. I've tried a couple of different kinds. I've tried the powders. I've tried some drink kind of superfoods, although those unfortunately tend to have high fructose corn syrup in them, but not a whole lot. But it makes it sweet, but that's why it tastes good. I've actually found if you have a Trader Joe's nearby, they make a really nice like a greens type of powder, and it's very tasty. Good enough to the point that my girlfriend will actually use it. She hates all that stuff.
I
So,
was actually just at Trader Joe's like a half hour ago and noticed it. I looked at it and it looked pretty decent. Like I looked at the ingredients and it was at, they had a greens one and
like a berry, right?
one that had a little bit more fruit ingredients in there, and it actually looked pretty decent.
Yeah, it's really good. Pick up a bottle and try it
Nice.
and
I'll
see if you
definitely
like it.
try it. I'll try it.
Yeah, because the way that I look at it also is there's a whole, especially if you go to like a natural food store, they will have shelves of this stuff, and you've got all these different kinds, and you're going, what's good, what's not. Really, just look down the label and see. Most of these superfoods, it's not a vitamin, so you're not really getting a whole bunch of vitamins out of it. You're not really getting a whole bunch of fiber out of these things either. And it's basically, in the most basic sense, it's an alkaline source. So, if that's the case, then some of them are very pricey and others are reasonably priced. And just as the consumer, just look around for something that what are you after when you buy a greens product, and what are you hoping to get from it? And then, of course, if it tastes well. So, I don't have a problem with him putting in an orange juice at all. I mean, some of these are pretty tasty, and others are just horrible. You know, so you know, again, it's not, the idea isn't that orange juice is going to hurt you or it's going to be bad for you in some way. The only thing that really is to be concerned is just like what Tony had blogged about, what McDonald had written about, which has been, you know, in that research for a while, is that liquid calories really don't register with the body. So you do have to be cautious about how much you're drinking. But, you know, come on, a cup of orange juice in the morning, I don't think anything adverse is going to happen to you.
What do you think, Lee? What about for people who are dieting? Is that, you know, is that cup of fruit juice going to make a huge difference? Or?
Nah, I don't really think so. I don't really. It, you know, at the end of the day, it's the caloric intake and energy expenditure. You know, we talked about, of course, you know, before, if you're getting down to really, really sick lean competition levels, that changes everything. Everything's different. But putting some superfood or some greens or anything like that and some orange juice, you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
All right, let's get to the rest of the question.
Second question pertains to red tea. It's something that I had heard of recently coming out of South Africa, and was wondering if you had any insight on this, especially as compared to green tea. And that's pretty much it. So thanks very much for an excellent podcast, and keep up the great work. Bye.
So, John, I know you use, or you've talked in the past about red tea. You're a big fan, correct?
White tea I like.
Oh, white tea.
I've never actually tried red tea. Each tea, I mean, I know that, you know, I know little to nothing about teas other than the fact that, you know, each one is going to offer a different antioxidant type, different benefits. There's tons of research on tea. Most of it points to the fact that although you can have health benefits from drinking tea, a lot of times it's a whole lot of tea to actually see an effect. So I tend to take, and, you know, Lee may know, have a different point of view, or may have seen more research about that. But I tend to take the stance of drink something that you enjoy drinking. I like green teas. I like white teas. And that's generally the type of tea that I drink. But I've had some red teas in the past. They're not bad if you enjoy the taste. I think you're at least in as good a place as any other with most teas. But as far as getting the health benefits of it, you know, drink it because you like it and because it's good for you, in the same sense that water is good for you and non caloric beverages are good for you. But if you do get some kind of health benefit from it, that's great. But you probably have to drink a whole lot of it to see that.
Also, for people out in the audience, if you hear a little bit of static when John talks, that's completely his fault. That has nothing to do with what's going on at my great setup on my end. That is John, and hopefully we'll have that remedied sometime in the future. I don't know if what's changed in John's life to cause that. If you got in a fight with like an electricity station or something. Lame joke of the week from Kevin Larrabee. Lee, what do you think?
Yeah, it was a pretty bad joke.
I apologize.
But besides that, as far as, you know, there's so many differences between red, white, green. There are differences between them. The red, I believe, and usually it's sold as the rooibos teas. They're already oxidized, and from that apparently there can be higher health benefits. Don't know. Green tea has been highly tested, and there are, you know, definite benefits to taking in some green tea, so that's great. I stand by John. If you're going to get it in you and you find it to be something that you know, tastes good, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. I'm a supporter of teas. I like teas. I personally stick to, I like whites and greens myself. I never really like the red very much, and don't really take to black too well either, unless it's highly flavored, and then, well, that kind of defeats the purpose a little bit. So, just kind of take in what you can get. There are definite health benefits. I believe the red can really help with digestive problems. I think that they're in a lot of GI tract regulating kind of remedy, home, homeopath kind of thing. So definitely good for more maybe gut health over some of the green and the white. But that's really about all I know. I'm not huge on the differences in the teas. I just know that there's some small varying differences. But at the end of the day, just get in something that makes you feel good and gives you some good energy and that you can feel good drinking.
Tony, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, not really. Teas. I drink green tea. That's about all I can add. I honestly have no idea of the differences between all of them. I just know I drink green tea.
Good.
That's all I got. That's all I got. I'm sorry. I'm not a tea expert.
Yes, the next question has to do about back injuries. I'll try to turn this up as loud as I can, but I apologize the volume for this voicemail is kind of low.
A lot for the podcast. I just really have two things. Is it normal to sustain an injury after cycling off creatine? And if it is, then what can be done to prevent that?
So I think we can all say no.
Yeah.
Okay.
I heard creatine. That's all I heard.
Basically what he said, is there any facts or basis behind, increased injury after cycling off of creatine?
No.
Okay.
It's also kind of along the same lines. I recently injured my back lifting too heavy and with not enough rest in between sets. I'm now rehabbing from that. I eat almost entirely pure supplement with CLA, spirulina, flax oil, and magnesium. So my question really is, what exercises can I do for rehabbing my back, along with what type of activities can you recommend for us fanatical lifestyle movers, I guess, to do when they are injured? Thank you so much. Take care, guys.
Okay, so basically the gist of his question was that he hurt his back recently, lifting too heavy without enough rest. So what can he be doing in terms of exercises or rehab to help, help alleviate some of that back pain? So, John, obviously, we're going to throw this to you first.
Yeah, it's a really difficult question to answer because I hurt my back is a very broad kind of statement, and there are so many things that he may possibly have done to himself. In general, if we assume that it's a muscle strain and that it's not underlying something, potentially more serious, like a problem with the disc or even potentially a problem with the skeletal system, then the general idea of acutely looking at the back and seeing, okay, what's strong, what's weak, and what was actually strained. When we look at a strain in the body, what we're looking for is two things: what muscle was actually strained, and then what are its synergists? What are the muscles that help it to do its own job? Because chances are those synergists are actually weak and it caused that muscle to do too much, and that's why it's strained in the first place. If a normal muscle is placed under a normal stress, it's not going to be injured. But if a normal muscle is either placed on an abnormal stress, meaning that it's too much stress, the potential of an injury is there. Or if that muscle was already abnormal, something's wrong with it, and you're trying to do something normally, there you might also get injury. So his description was that he didn't take enough rest. So that's an abnormal stress. The muscles that he was using and whatever, hurt, spasmed out, or got strained was doing something above and beyond what it's normally capable of doing. But what that muscle could be, I don't really know. And you'd have to actually be evaluated to be able to give you a better idea of, okay, well, then you need to stretch this. You need to perform soft tissue on that. You need to strengthen that muscle, whatever it is. In general, I would recommend that, he take, go to a physical therapist or other licensed rehabilitationist or therapists to get evaluated. Resting it will obviously help in the short term to get it better, to take stress off of the system. He needs to maintain a neutral spine, so he doesn't want to utilize that muscle while it's under stress, while it's repairing itself. Otherwise, it's just going to keep on re-injuring. But then ultimately, what he needs to do is to evaluate why that took place in the first place, and that's something that a therapist should be able to do for him. Why did this injury happen? And let's take the necessary steps so that it doesn't happen again. Chances are he was fatigued, and because of that, he moved improperly, and that's why he got that that spasm in the first place. So in the future, he needs to be very conscientious of his form and for not pushing past his ability to maintain that form for the sake of weights. You always want to challenge yourself in the gym, but not when it comes at the price of good movement. So sorry, it's very, very general, but it's just kind of hard to give specifics when we're not exactly sure what the problem is.
Tony, you've probably seen a lot of injuries like that working in the field with everyday people at Sports Club LA and things like that, and now dealing with athletes. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree wholeheartedly with John. I mean, it's a very broad statement when someone says they injure their back. I'm for the sake of argument, I'm going to assume he meant his lower back. And if that's the case, you know, it's more than likely, you know, a motor issue where, you know, he could have buckled somewhere, you know, whether it's he was fatigued or whatever. So he needs to be cognizant of reestablishing those gross motor patterns and, you know, trying to buttress that sheer force going into flexor or anything like that. So, you know, as far as what he can do, I mean, certainly, you know, you can talk about core stability and blah, 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 blah. But it stands to reason you probably still do a fair share of single leg work. You know, pull throughs would be a good option. You know, trying to learn to dissociate the hips from the lumbar spine. I would even say, you know, he could still be doing pull ups and whatnot. But certainly his number one priority should be reestablishing those motor patterns of you know, in establishing a little greater degree of core stability. But it's a broad question. I mean, saying anything over the internet or our podcast really isn't going to do him any good. But certainly, hopefully, he can learn from this experience and have a better understanding of what he shouldn't be doing. And certainly, you know, trying to be aware of reestablishing those proper motor patterns and whatnot. So, John pretty much hit the nail on the head. So. You know, I can just pretty much disagree with what he said and, you know, say that it's tough to say as far as, you know, what he should be doing, what he shouldn't be doing, especially when it's just a broad question to begin with.
Lee, is there anything you'd like to add before we move on?
Just, you know, basically what they said was good. And whenever any sort of injury occurs, something that I always like to talk with people about is definitely – I know that when I've injured myself, I always try and look at what led up to that. I think it's very key to figuring out what maybe was in balance and maybe what were you not doing correctly that led up to that, so that you're not going to be for the rest of your life focusing on how to recover from an injury, but how to not end up there in the first place. Just as a little additive, just really focus on what you were doing beforehand and how to maybe try and keep from hurting yourself again in the future. If you have weak ankles, make sure to focus on that. If you have weak hips, you know, maybe give a focus to that. You know, just don't just focus on what's injured at a time. Focus on everything so that this doesn't happen in the future. Because that's about all we can give right now.
It isn't a FitCast episode without talking about Amy Jo Johnson. So our first mailbag question.
Yeah, you got to get her on the show.
Yeah, I know. Well, our first mailbag question is from Carl. And by the way, that announcement we were teasing before, it's actually an Amy Jo Johnson podcast. So Tony and I are going to be starting that up. And if people want to join, let us know. The first question he has is... Tony was talking about how people look at him weird when he orders a six-egg omelet. Why lift weights and work at a restaurant that does breakfast that it's about a mile away from the gym? I talk to the regulars at the gym, and they tell me we have on the menu and what I can do to make their order better for them. So now I'm getting a lot more, quote, bodybuilder breakfasts in the morning. For example, I made a four-egg white omelet with spinach, onions, tomatoes, and a side order of turkey links. And number two, Amy Jo Johnson, the Pink Ranger, is on TV again. She's on a show called Flashpoint. It is on during the summer, but you can watch the episodes on CBS.com. And yes, she still looks good. I would just put in an editor's note, that's not good, but great. And now to his actual question that has to do with fitness and nutrition. He says, Like I said earlier, I work in a restaurant for 40 hours a week. I also walk to and from there, which is about a mile round trip. I don't get a chance to take breaks unless it's really slow, so I'm on my feet all day. I try to go to the gym 3 days a week if I'm not too tired. Upper body workouts are fine, but legs are another story. They're usually tired or sore after work. I hit them on my off days, but that's usually once a week. Nutrition may be a factor since I can't stop and eat during the rush. During the rush, I make a smoothie and I drink about half of it 3 hours after I start my shift and another half 3 to 3.5 hours later. It is usually made of whey protein, cottage cheese, low-carb yogurt, natural peanut butter, and whatever fruit is cheap. I was wondering if you and the Scooby Gang have any routines, tips for people like me. Any help will be greatly appreciated. Thanks, and keep going off topic. They are funny. So, Carl, you made us do that again this week, so that's good for everyone involved. So, first off, I used to work at Best Buy, and I used to do like 10 or 11-hour shifts, and I'm guessing everyone or many people out there have like worked in retail where it can tend to get really busy and you don't have a lot of downtime. And, you know, one of the easiest things like I found was, you know, you got to look at a couple factors. First off, it's probably something that you can't keep refrigerated, so it's going to have to be something that you can keep in your pocket, or if it is refrigerated, you're going to have to think about bringing a cooler with you, and it's going to still have to be something you can really grab and eat very fast. So a lot of the things that I used to use and still could fit into Carl's time at work is obviously any kind of nuts, like mixed nuts, raw almonds, things like that are going to be great. And also, if you can find a good, and this is depending on your goals and things like that, but if you can find a good protein bar, because obviously if he says he doesn't really have a lot of time to make a shake, but he does makes like one gigantic smoothie, just to change it up, like a good protein bar, the Metabolic Dry protein bars from Biotest are really good, and you can even, you know, you can make your own. Like this is something that you can do is make your own protein bars. But that does seem like he's got a pretty decent and solid smoothie going on right now. Tony, what do you think? Does he need to find something a little bit better to grab in between his busy shifts?
I'm not really too much concerned about the nutrition aspect. Is the fact that, you know, I can attest to being on your feet all day. I mean, I'm walking around training athletes and people 6, 7, 8 hours a day on rubber matting. So, I mean, I can relate to him as far as, you know, your legs feeling kind of tired at the end of the day. What I can say to that is, you know, check your footwear. That in and of itself can help quite a bit. And number two, I know the spine it needs a constant variation of stimulus. So it's like, if you sit too long, it's going to hurt. If you stand too long, it's going to hurt. So, I mean, it's always nice. Like me with standing, I know Michael Stair and Cassandra Forsyth wrote a really good article last year for T-Nation discussing how like people who stand a lot need to get a little bit more traction on their spine. So maybe trying to find ways to deload your spine during the day. It's kind of hard to explain what you can do over a podcast, but certainly looking up that article can give you a couple of good tips. You know, but I would look at doing that and, you know, checking out your footwear to see, you know, if that might be a culprit, you know, as far as stuff in the gym. You know, he's working he's training 3 days a week, which I think is really good. So, as long as he maybe approaches it in the sense of, it sounds to me, he sounds like he's doing 3 days of upper body and on his off days he was doing lower body. So I think maybe he needs to confine his training a little bit and maybe just revert back to 3 days a week and try to go full body on those days. Take a little bit of strain off the body during the week. So those were the things that glared off at me after looking at the question.
Tony, you said that he should check his footwear. What should he look out for?
Well, he might he might just need something a little bit more padding, a little bit more cushioning under his feet. If he's working in the kitchen, I mean, he's probably moving around quite a bit. So, you know, try to get something with a little bit of cushioning. I know Jonathan will probably be a little better person to talk to as far as like the biomechanics behind that. But, you know, so it might be someone along those lines.
John, let's talk biomechanics.
Always a fun topic for listeners. Yeah, I mean, really what we're looking at and the way that I would look at it here, first, just a real quick note as far as nutrition, go out to Kmart and buy yourself a nice beer cooler and a couple of ice packs, and you can make anything that you want, put in the cooler, and you can eat throughout the day. You can have sandwiches, you can have soups, and heat it in a microwave, whatever you have the opportunity to use. I know I carry around my cooler pretty much everywhere that I go. As far as biomechanics, yeah, I mean, what we're looking at here, when he's walking around all day on his feet, absolutely, you're going to have, and it just depends. I can't say, well, he's going to have this occur or that occur, because I really don't know how he presents. I don't know if his foot tends to be pronated or supinated, although most people do tend to be pronated. I don't know what kind of posture he has, but what I can say is that whatever he has will be magnified throughout the course of the day, because as you fatigue, as you begin to wear on certain areas of the foot and that becomes painful, you're going to change the way that you move in order to compensate for that. And that's the basic concept of a compensation pattern anyway. So what he does need, Tony, is right on. You need something that's going to be comfortable, that's going to be cushioned enough for you so that you're avoiding that kind of wearing on certain areas of the body, and then changing the way that you move that would then predispose other areas that are not used to those stresses to absorb stresses. And that can ultimately lead to knee pain or more often back pain. So you certainly want to be aware of your footwear and that you're changing it often enough so that you're maintaining the life of your shoes. Sneakers, as you utilize sneakers, the actual cushioning starts to deabsorb over time. That's why runners will change sneakers often. You need to consider yourself an athlete. Your athletic endeavor is just like a long distance walking, let's say. So in that sense, you would take your training, your footwear, anything that has to do with your quote unquote sport, and look at it just the way an athlete would. As far as your training goes, that lower body training, right now you're looking at a lot of volume with very little intensity. So if we look at the extremes of that, if we, let's say, a marathon runner, it's the same thing. It's a lot of volume with very little intensity. Each footfall is not a strong footfall the way as a sprinter's would be. It's not a lot of excessive force, but over time you're dealing with thousands and thousands of steps. A sprinter, their event is over in, the top level sprinters, their event is over in 9 seconds, 8 seconds. So they are putting out a lot of intensity for a very little amount of time. So when these two athletes practice, a marathon runner will practice with a lot of volume, and then their strength training has to be very short, quick, high intensity, low volume. A sprinter, their workouts are very high intensity, so they may do a number of sprints throughout each training day to build up volume. So for the listener, he would be more like the marathon runner. When he works out, maybe, two sessions of high intensity legs per week, two or three sets of, 3 to 5 reps of squats, let's say, or, possibly deadlifts or something like that. And you're just looking for a lot of bang for the buck and not trying to get, 10 different exercises in there for an hour or something like that. And that should help him to keep down the overall fatigue, but to still be able to increase his fitness and his strength.
I muted my mic. I apologize, everyone. It makes it so when I like my dog's barking in the background a little bit. Sorry, Lee. What do you think he can do in terms of nutrition as well? Do you have any other tips?
I noticed that he put in his one. I've been a waitress and a bartender and worked like severe amount of time on the, like I've done 70-hour weeks and it kills. It absolutely kills. So, one thing I noticed that you put is that you put you didn't put that you had any sort of really large carb sources. And I'm not saying that you necessarily have to go to town on the carbs, but I can assure you that you're giving some really good expenditure. And if you don't have anything with you that's a little bit more on the carb side, you're gonna feel it a little bit more, especially particularly in the legs. The legs are one of the easiestly and most quickly depleted of those carb sources when you're in a situation like that with a concurrent standing. So what one of the first things I would do is I would kind of up your carb sources a little bit during this period of time and maybe select a protein bar that has a little bit more of a carb balance. So don't go with a low carb protein bar, go with maybe a heavy and substantial bar, like a Zero Impact, or those are really good. I'd love those bars, and very nice balance there. And, you know, you can certainly make yourself just a protein, like kind of oatmeal cookie, and kind of keep it with you. Definitely fun and good to eat. So I would look at playing with your macros a little bit more and making sure that you're getting enough energy for the kind of work that you're doing, because standing like that and running around in a restaurant, I mean, anytime I got a restaurant job, I lost 10 pounds like that. Like I lost weight. So you need to look at your expenditure and make sure that you're providing the energy for what you're doing, so that when you do finally get to your workouts, that you have something left to give, because it seems like to me that you're just burning out and that you don't really have anything left to give. So it could just be throwing in a little extra carb source could help you feel good and charged for your workout. Make sure to focus on your pre and post workout nutrition, particularly when you have such a physically demanding job and then are trying to do physically demanding training.
Speaking of post-workout nutrition, we have a bonus surprise question from Roger, who literally emailed me about 5 minutes ago. I thought it was a pretty interesting question, so I just want to throw it around the panel really quickly. He said, let's talk meat. As far as protein goes, I tend to have 6 eggs and 16 ounces of cooked meat with pre- and post-workout nutrition added on training days. So I'm guessing that's his total protein for the day. As a 200-pound man looking to get stronger, how is my protein looking? So, Lee, we'll shoot this off to you, but it looks like he might need some more protein.
Wait, is that all he's getting for the whole day?
It looks like it. He says, I tend to have 6 eggs, comma, 16 ounces of cooked meat, comma, with pre/post-workout nutrition added on training days.
Oh, yeah, no, more protein. Period. 200 pounds looking to get stronger. You eat and eat a lot and then eat more. When it comes to getting strong, you've got to eat. You've got to pack on the protein and you've got to eat. So I would definitely up your protein intake. And granted, I don't really have much more, you know, to give than that. But when you're training for strength, you've got to feed it. You know, you're going to up those numbers. Just, you know, I know so many people that spend so much of their time in fat loss, and once they finally get done with it and they start to train, you know, one of the best supplements is food, and they start to eat food and they're like, holy, I can lift like crazy now. And it's like, yeah, because you're eating. Eat more food. I'm not going to go any more in depth than that. Just eat.
I think that's all we need to cover, but that's just because we like to hit on as many emails as possible. The next question comes from Brandon. He says, hi Kevin and company, I'm a master's student in engineering and my tenure is coming to completion, yet I am growing pretty damn sick of engineering and my real passion lies in fitness and nutrition. I read a lot, I have EC's book among others, and was wondering what can I do to get into the fitness game. At this point, it is doubtful that I would get a degree in I'm guessing it means like physical education or health science, anything like that, but what about certifications? Any ideas? Thanks. So I think this is something that, you know, a lot of our listeners, like I know people who have degrees in something else, but they're obviously like very, very big into fitness and training and things like that. And they love just all the ins and outs. So what I would say, Brandon, is if you can, best thing you could probably do is try to get an internship first and see if you really do like it, because people remember the scandal or the whole thing about me going to Los Angeles for a couple months this past summer, because I wanted to, you know, get a taste of something different, because like Brandon, I did something in school for 4 years, and you know, I kind of need something else. I need to test out different waters or things like that. And I found, like, you know, I couldn't sit in an office all day, and that wasn't for me. So I stuck with fitness. So in terms of certifications, like, guys, I don't know, can you get the CPT from the NSCA without a college degree, correct?
You can get the CPT, but he's got a degree in engineering, so he can get a CSAS.
Yes, it doesn't have to be in health science or a health related field anymore. Good call. So what do you guys think? Do you guys have any other advice for Brandon? Like, I don't know if we should just say like an internship or if he should go into the big thing is going to be education. He's got to, even though he has a couple books or he might, you know, read T Nation, there's a lot of education just from anatomy and physiology to kinesiology and things like that. Like, do you have any tips?
Yeah, I do, because that brings up a good point. We get a lot of people who read books and participate in forums and think they can just automatically go into a field where you're going to be dealing with real people, having to do assessments, having to work around injuries, what have you. It's a lot more than just reading books. Like, you need to, you definitely need to try to look into getting a mentorship or an internship somewhere to see if this is what you really want to do. And yeah, getting a certification is definitely going to be a foot in the door. But outside of that, you know, certainly like going to places, you know, we have interns at Cressy Performance, you know, Mike Boyle is an intern. I mean, pretty much you need to find someone in your local area whom has a pretty good reputation or whom you've heard of, and you need to go there and experience what it actually entails. It's not just about showing up and, you know, showing someone how to deadlift. You know, it's really about, and not to mention people often neglect the social aspect as well. I mean, you're going to be dealing with a lot of different people. There's weird people and there's people. I mean, I'm sure John Lee can attest to this. There's a social aspect to being a strength coach, personal trainer, whatever. You need to be a person that can deal with a wide range of people. So, the only thing I can say is yes, continue to keep reading. That's great that they're reading books from Eric and they're reading book and they're going to T Nation and what have you. That's fantastic. But certainly they need to get some real world, hands-on, knowledge and experience as well.
Well, I don't think he, you know, he doesn't need to necessarily go back to school and get a degree. And
no, not at all. But there's people, this happens quite a bit. Like I probably get an email a week from somebody who's, an engineer or, you know, they work telecommunications or they're a computer guy that they like, this is, oh, I'm getting tired of this. No, I really love working out. I love helping people. What can I do to get into the industry? You know, it's not uncommon at all. And certainly, you don't need to have a kinesiology degree or a health science degree. I mean, yeah, it helps. Because just from a knowledge base standpoint, but certainly it's not a necessity. I know people who don't have degrees who do very well in the industry. I mean, but certainly it's not to say that it doesn't help.
Well, what about just going? What I was going to say is that there's definitely a couple of things, especially things that you should check out if you want to look at things like functional anatomy, picking up something like Building the Efficient Athlete, where they pretty much you know go through the main sets of muscles that you need to know. It's something that you really should pick up. And also, you know, you can look at like community colleges who might have like simple like night classes for, you know, kinesiology, or you might want to take like a basic anatomy and physiology class, or even exercise science, to just get your feet wet and just kind of, you know, you gotta know some of these words that are out there, so you can, you know, go to a seminar and understand what they're going to be talking about. And obviously, I think we can all preach to continuing education as much as possible as well. So,
go ahead, Lee.
I was just going to say, I definitely think that with the formal education that you have already, I think that, you know, find a cert or find, you know, the CS, you know, something to that degree, go that route as far as, you know, your paper, if you will. But I think one of the keys for anyone, because I get these questions all the time too, and a lot of my clients turn to that kind of an area. I had one client in particular that I trained, and I ended up setting him up with an internship in California, and he moved from the East Coast over to California and just jumped on it. Sometimes it depends on how much you want it and how far you're willing to go. There are tons of high-level trainers that do internships all the time. I highly recommend getting in the field. I locally, if I wanted to train someone, I trained them. I found them. I went to colleges and I found students and athletes that I wanted to train. Like I found them and I trained them. And you've got to just give it your all, and you've got to jump in, and it's the only way that you're gonna get anywhere with it. So you're gonna have to be proactive, and you're gonna have to dive in there, and you're gonna have to really get your hands dirty. And I worked 15-hour days and made nothing, not a cent, not a dime, because I just wanted the experience. And if you don't have the opportunity to be somewhere in, like, you know, LA with like the hottest trainers ever, like, you know, if you're stuck in, you know, Middleton, you know, Alaska, whatever, and you don't have a choice, then you just go, you find them. You got to find them. You got to do whatever you have to do and get your hands on it and get that experience best possible. So I just want to kind of take it from that aspect. I believe in the education. I believe in interning, and I believe in doing and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, you're sometimes only left with a few options. You've got to just go out there and you've just got to take it. So I'll let John go, because I know that he really knows the side of the educational aspect.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because internship, absolutely. I mean, I had the opportunity to intern with Bill Hartman and I actually did that as part of my physical therapy requirements. BillHartman.net and IFAST. Go there. Just shout out to Bill. But what do you call it? The stuff that I learned there, I mean, it absolutely changed everything that I was doing. That experience, hands down, was invaluable. So just like what the guys already said, if you find someone that you can kind of be a mentor, that you can work with, bounce questions off of, whatever, that is absolutely, without question, an amazing experience. And even before I went to physical therapy school, I was working for a physical therapist, Dean at ProCare in Clark, New Jersey, and he's brilliant. And it just helped me to kind of see things in a different light and a different understanding of this type of stuff I was already doing. Now, my background, I didn't have a degree in exercise science. It's actually political science and history as an undergrad, and I guess I just didn't think I'd ever work for a living, but that's what I took. And you know, very shortly after I graduated, I was a consultant, and I hated what I was doing. And I, like a lot of the questions, right, that we all get, I realized that I really enjoyed this type of stuff. Now, my strategy did come into physical therapy. It wasn't just to go into like the exercise field, but to actually go into physical therapy. But I used training to kind of branch me into that and to see if I really would enjoy this type of work. And of course, now I freaking love it and really hope to try to stay in both fields when I'm done with school in 5 months. Oh God, I can't wait. But what I ended up doing was, first when I got certified, I had already been working at a gym, just doing floor hours and trying to get experience and learning from the trainers there. And I asked my boss at the time, you know, who should I get certified through? And, she gave me a bunch of different ideas, and my response was, okay, but what's the best? And that's the way that I always looked at it. Is I said, you know what, I was coming from not having a background other than, you know, experience sort of as an athlete and sort of from exercising, but no real experience. And so the way that I looked at it is that I needed to make up some space really quickly. And so I tried to do that. I did eventually go back to school and take a baccalaureate classes in the physiology and the anatomy and all that type of exercise stuff. But you know, like everyone else said, you don't have to get another degree. You could take one or two courses to kind of set you off, to give you that foundation, and then use continuing education and other avenues of information to bolster what you're doing. The other side of it, though, is I also teach at Rutgers, and I now teach in the exercise science department. Yeah, and it's interesting to see those students, even though they're – I mean, I have juniors and seniors in my class. I have a high-level class, and they don't have the experience. So we're looking at one group of people that have a lot of information, but they don't really have any experience. And then we would look at your model where you would probably have a lot more experience, but maybe not the formal education. But don't overlook your education in engineering either, because biomechanics and kinesiology, from people that have a strong background in engineering and mathematics, it can work very well for you. So use what you already have to branch forward to maybe a new career, but realize that there are some pieces missing. But when you put those pieces together, you can be very, very effective.
Well, hopefully we answered your question to the best of our abilities, and definitely keep us informed on what path you do take. It would be great to hear from you in the future. But we are running out of time here. We have that interview with Brad coming up right after the break. So a couple things, you know, a lot of newspapers out there, they tend to endorse a candidate for election. And since, you know, the election's coming up here in the United States, we have it's pretty fierce right now. We've agreed to announce that we will be putting our support towards Bill Hartman for president of the United States of America. He has, you know, the background skills. He has the foreign policy skills. And, you know, if you ever get injured, he'd be the guy that I would call in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. when something goes wrong. So, Bill, we wish you the best of luck this upcoming Monday and Tuesday. People, please go out and vote either way, no matter who you're voting for, whether it be Bill Hartman or, you know, could be for Tony Jellicoe.
Absolutely. A vice president.
Oh, you guys split a deal, huh? Good for you. Or you could just, you know, go back. I think anyone, if you want to hear a little bit about Tony's platform, go to episode 21 at about a minute. And about
minutes ago when he agreed to listen to this, the show, folks, with no preparation time. So, special guest, who are you?
This is Tony Jellicoe.
Oh.
How's it going?
I'm great. I'm going off like 25 minutes of
Kevin,
preparation time.
Am I dead?
Kevin, those pictures I took of you yesterday in your Halloween outfit are going to be all over the internet.
Oh, guys, that's episode 21. You can pick that up through iTunes or the fitcast.com. Tony, you know what? We have a lot of, you know, we have a lot of new listeners, and I think they should go back into our previous episodes. And,
yeah.
You know, it's very interesting.
Like, let me just say that to the new listeners, that when that episode happened, I guess I this is when I had respect for Kevin and thought he was kind of a big deal. So, like, doing the FitCast was it caught me off guard. Like, he basically called me a half hour before and asked if I could do the show. So I guess I was caught off guard and I was kind of excited to do it. So
wow.
When he asked who was on the show, and I blatantly sounded like, you know.
You know, to be fair, in the episode, Tony did talk about, there was, believe it or not, this is from September of 2006. This is over 2 years ago. And Tony actually talked about soft tissue work for a lot of the episodes. So if you do want some info on soft tissue and warming up, that would be a great episode to listen to. And we also talked about organic milk. So there you go.
Did we? Wow.
We did. I don't remember that whatsoever, but we did.
I don't either.
So I think that's going to wrap it up for us here. Before we do go, Tony, I guess there will be some interesting stuff coming up on your blog on Monday.
Yes, tomorrow. I will. Yes, there will be.
And just want to let people out there know that was not my idea. As an intern at Crested Performance, I wore that outfit as kind of like, you know, you're an intern, so you do what you're told, and there's no questions asked. There's complaining.
You liked it.
There was complaining, but there was no. Okay.
My blog too. I'm putting it up on my blog.
Thanks.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow, John. Does that mean you're going to blog this week too?
I can't make any promises.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll blog. I'm actually, believe it or not, I'm actually have like 3 or 4 different blogs that I'm working on all simultaneously. But I actually moved this weekend, and I had midterms the week before.
Oh wow.
So, Been a little busy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Where'd you move?
Shaolin, Staten Island.
Oh.
Yeah, I both of my rotations are going to be on the island, and my roommate was moving out anyway, so looked like a good opportunity to relocate for a little bit. So I actually moved in a really nice nice area right by the Outer Bridge, which is like 20 minutes from Rutgers and probably 5 to 10 minutes from my clinical. So it's a win-win. That's full of wins.
Nice, dude.
Yeah.
And for people, you know, just preemptively, I just think of it like I want to think of it as MacGyver going undercover at Hooters.
Does that make you feel better about it?
Nope. I'm looking at the pictures right now, and I'm like, wow, that's – oh, my God. This is just – if
it's the greatest picture.
There's another one, too. There's – Cressy has more, so I'm sure you can go to ericcressy.blogspot.com to have fun with that. And that's just because, you know, if you can't have fun and point fingers at yourself, then what's the point?
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that. You were a sport yesterday, Kevin. You took it like a man – and,
I train clients in that all day.
Really?
By the way.
We actually had new people in that day, so doing evaluations.
There were parents popping in and out.
They probably
so.
Thought, what the hell is going on at this place?
That is so fantastic.
Yes. And so, Lee, what can we expect from avidityfitness.net this week?
Well, I'm going to be doing a blog post about PCOS.
What?
I just keep looking at it. It makes me so happy.
Have you seen the other one? I'll forward you the other picture.
Anyway, I'm gonna be doing a blog topic on PC OS that should make a lot of my eating disorder and female readers kind of happy. And then of course follow ups of the Big Meal Challenge, and everything's going really well there. There's been some fantastic progress already for 2 weeks, and then some podcasts coming up. So that's about it. Pretty simple week, but I'm just. That's it.
You can check your email now too, Lee and John, and that's the full extent. There's also one with the other intern, Chris, who was dressed up as Little Red Riding Hood. So
let me just say, like, I'm just gonna throw this out there. I was gonna Pete and I did, like.
Look at how tight those shorts are, guys.
Oh my God, you're just a sausage, like Jesus Christ.
What? Just call me a sausage?
Kevin was packing heat yesterday.
Is that stuff?
No.
Kevin's just really excited to be a Cressy trainer, I guess.
Oh, so I hope people are... Oh, we had Halloween. For people who are outside the States, we had Halloween this past week, so that's why I dressed up. It's not a normal occurrence. I think Lee even muted herself.
She might have. Or I think she just walked away in disgust.
I think she might have. So that's going to wrap it up for here, folks. I really appreciate you tuning into the show. Wow. Again, Brad... We'll be coming up right after the break, and we will have a midweek show this week. Make sure to check it out on Wednesday. Huge promises there. I promise we will have that up because things were a little crazy last week, and we can't talk about that yet. So thanks again for listening. Check us out at thefitcast.com. Check us out on iTunes. Please subscribe. And until next week, you know, we haven't done that in a while. Until next week, I'm Kevin Larrabee. Tony.
I'm Jonathan Fast.
I'm Tony.
Lee is having a heart attack.
I heard her. Oh my God, she literally walked away from her computer.
I'm Lee Bill.
No way. She actually. I think she hit the volume on her microphone.
Yeah, I think so too. Oh, that's all right. All right, well. We're out of here. We did our best. That's Tony Gentilcore, Boston Herald Step Up Blog. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. With us right now is Brad Pylon. He's a nutrition professional with over 7 years' experience in the nutrition supplement industry. He lives in the greater Toronto area and is the author of Eat, Stop, Eat. He's a guy that I've been trying to get on the show for a while, and it's a great pleasure to have you on, Brad. It's nice to finally get you on.
It's great to be on the show finally.
Absolutely. So a lot of our discussion is going to talk about your book, Eat, Stop, Eat.
Yep.
And first, I just want to talk a little bit about your past. I mean, you seem to have somewhat of an interesting past, so I think we should talk about it.
Absolutely. I'll take it right from the sort of the start. So
all right.
I started off always interested in sort of bodybuilding. When you're young and you're 15, 16, it's always more bodybuilding than it is fat mm-hmm. loss. So I started off in, you know, just sort of reading muscle and fitness magazines, and then, of course, getting into working in a sort of a supplement shop, and then from there studying nutrition in university. And then from there, I landed into the supplement industry. And from the supplement industry, I landed in the R&D side of things. So I never did any sales. I wasn't overly involved in marketing. My job was really the clinical research that's involved in some of the larger supplement companies actually do research. And so my job was sort of overseeing the research and product development side of things. So it's a very unique view of the supplement industry and the fitness industry as a whole being on that side. So my job was, it was an international company, so there was international research being done. And I was responsible for sort of flying from site to site, meeting with the primary researchers who were doing our research, and talking with them about sort of the latest and greatest and everything to do with muscle building or fat loss. Because when you work in the supplement industry, it's 5 days a week, 12 hours a day, muscle building, fat loss. It's everything that could, you know, your whole life revolved around those two things. So it was pretty cool. The problem is that as a scientist, you love science because of questions, right? It's, mm-hmm. Science is the forming and answering of questions. So it's amazing when your questions revolve around things that can help make a, you know, $100 million a year product. Everybody loves you. But when your questions start sort of deviating from that, it starts becoming really difficult. So if Kevin, if you and I were to design a supplement, and then and you're funding the research, and I'm setting the research up for you, you know, and a year later I come back to you, I'm like, oh, Kevin, the good news, bad news. Bad news is the research didn't turn out the way you wanted. The product didn't really work. The good news is it's really cool the reason it didn't work, and I want a couple more million from you to find out why it didn't work. You know, you'd probably look at me like I'm crazy, and then that research would never really get done. Right? So that's the sort of the double-edged sword of doing research for the purpose of marketing a product is when you're really into the science and you really love it, a lot of the questions you want answered probably aren't going to be funded unless they kind of result in the development of a product. So I ended up leaving the supplement industry after about 7-8 years of doing R&D, and went back to school because the best way to answer the questions you want answered is to do it on your own dime and your own time. Mm-hmm. So, and then school was a pretty simple plan. You know, I looked at what people were doing online and the success, both online and offline, of nutrition books, specifically books on how to lose weight. So I figured I'd go back for a year or two, do some research, and sort of put together my ultimate diet book. And to do that, you have to start somewhere. And I thought, okay, well, I'll start with what happens when you don't eat, right? We'll figure out all the bad things that happen to you when you don't eat, and then I'll build my amazing ultimate diet up from there. And that's where everything kind of fell apart for me. So when you study fasting and all of a sudden you start thinking, realizing the things you thought were going to happen didn't happen, you've got to make a decision. And one is just pretend you didn't see that data and keep going, design your ultimate diet, or admit that you've been wrong for a couple of years and the advice you've given people has been wrong, and adapt. And I figured the best way to learn would be to adapt, admit I was wrong, and go full-time into studying fasting, and that's what I did.
So you talk about a little bit of how you went back to school. Can you talk mm-hmm. about what the research said, or what did you find when you were researching just fasting yeah. and fat loss?
Okay, so generally what I thought would happen was I would find out that fasting is not eating, fasting, probably the worst thing you could do for your body. And then from there, I'd figure out why eating is amazing and the best thing you could do. It seems simple. So I started reviewing the research looking for, you know, all the evidence that would obviously show me that if you don't eat every 3 or 4 hours, your metabolism would just come screeching to a halt. And I couldn't find it. And in fact, I kept finding research that said that, you know, you could fast from 12 hours to 72 hours. That's sort of what we coined short-term fasting. And your metabolic rate doesn't slow down. So I thought, okay, well, fine. You know, your metabolic rate doesn't slow down. You're still losing tons of muscle. And then I looked it over. I'm like, oh, okay, well, you don't really lose muscle. And in that short of a time frame, there isn't a measurable loss in muscle size or mass, which became really odd, because then I realized the reason you're not losing muscle is that you're burning fat, right? And it goes kind of – it's not counterintuitive, but it's counter to what we've been told, which is that if you don't eat every 3 or 4 hours, metabolism slows down, you start losing muscle, and you hold on to all your fat. So research, and tons of it. This isn't new research. It's, you know, you can count it back from the early 1900s all the way up until recent papers published in the last couple months, I'm sure, that just continually show the same thing. And the cool thing is what I found is that if you look at your metabolism between 12 and 72 hours, that short-term fasting, it's remarkably similar to the metabolism you have during exercise. It's almost identical. So it's a metabolism that's whole priority is the liberation of your body fat for use as a fuel. So, you know, from that principle, when you look at the similarities between the two, just metabolically, you're like, well, okay, this makes a lot of sense then. I mean, exercise obviously causes your body to burn body fat, as does fasting. And that's where the whole idea of eat, stop, eat came from.
So you talked about how you found that people didn't lose muscle mass, but then who would this program be for? Is this program for people who are, you know, trying to, you know, get super lean? Could this also be adapted for, like you said, you're into bodybuilding. Could it be into people who are looking to get into a competitive state as well?
I think with the exception, I've done one show myself, and I don't really plan on doing another because they're hard. But I think with the exception of those last 2 weeks, like prepping for a bodybuilding show where everything just goes out the window and you start doing crazy things in terms of like glycogen loading and depletion and that sort of thing. With the exception of that small frame, I think yes. I think you could very easily get men's health cover ready just by use of a flexible intermittent fasting.
So how long can people use fasting or just the whole idea of it in terms of when are they going to see like a negative effect on their metabolism? Like what's the maximum length? And I don't know if you want to give out kind of like the certain amount of time that you use in the book.
The direction I could take there is that I can make the bold statement that you could probably do it for your entire life. And the evidence I take from that is there's, you know, dozens of cultures and hundreds of millions of people who use short periods of fasting as part of their culture. Mm-hmm. From anywhere from people who fast for 1 day a week to people who fast for twice a week to people who do segments of fasting all throughout a year. They've been doing so for millennia without any negative health effects. So I think the real question would be, you know, how long can we continue to eat the way we're eating, which is just constantly eating all throughout a day without a negative effect on our body or our metabolism? Because apparently we can fast for our entire adult life without any ill effects.
One of our listeners, Ryan, had a question. He asked, I've just started powerlifting with a new club at my college, and we just had our first meet and did very well, breaking personal and state records.
Good man.
Yeah, not bad. My question is, what kind of role would fasting play in a powerlifting program? I'd be afraid of it might affect my maximum effort lifts. I know you stated time and again that one doesn't lose muscle while fasting. What about lifting at and above maximum lifts?
That's good. Really good question. All right. So we know from just general research, looking at, you know, from sort of general athletes down to the everyday gym rat like myself, that there's a direct linear relationship between the size of a muscle and its strength. And since we know that fasting does not affect the size of a muscle, you know, we generally should say that normally it doesn't affect strength. However, when you get to an elite person like a powerlifter, and I'm sure everybody who's ever competed in powerlifting would agree that it's not just a physical thing. There's neurological and psychological components to a maximum lift. So the neurological part in terms of, you know, muscle recruitment and firing speed, and then the psychological part of if you're really feeling a lift and you're in a groove that day, you're going to have a great lift. So I don't really know the true answer to that, because it depends, one, psychologically how Ryan would feel about fasting. I have problems lifting on a full stomach. I get kind of nauseous, and I prefer to do my heavy lifts on an empty stomach, and that's my personal sort of psychology when it comes to heavy lifting. But I think there's not a lot of research on the neurological side or the psychological side of being fasted while lifting. But it'd be something that I'd be open to experimenting it on. I just wouldn't do it on my on a meat day, and I would try it out maybe during my regular rotation of training and see how it goes.
Now let's talk a little bit more about training.
Yeah.
When people think about, you know, not eating for periods of time, they're thinking about, like Ryan said, their training being affected. What kind of training do you tend to recommend when you're in this state? Like, I know a lot of people are into like turbulence training or EPOC or afterburn, like workouts
right.
for fat loss. Like, what do you recommend?
Well, the most important part about Eat Stop Eat is when people hear the name Eat Stop Eat now, they think of flexible intermittent fasting. And while that's a major component of it, the other 50% is a weight training program. The fact that I can say so confidently that you're not going to lose muscle mass is because you should be following a weight training program while on any diet. To get the best results from a diet, you should be weight training. I like any, just like the diet, I like any workout program that's simple and easy that you enjoy, but that's also challenging. I don't like the idea of people being in a gym for massive amounts of time just because, you know, if a little bit is good, I'm just going to keep going and going and go for the overkill just to make sure I'm getting the results I want. So I really enjoy programs like TT and afterburning, where the whole point is efficiency, least amount of time in the gym. And that's what I recommend along with Eat Stop Eat, since the whole idea of Eat Stop Eat is flexibility, simplicity, you know, being able to fit it into your life as opposed to trying to fit your life around a diet. And I think your weight training program should be the same. It should be something that gets you the results you're looking for in the least amount of time, but they're still enjoyable. I don't really think, from my personal experience, that you have to plan your fasting around your workouts or your workouts around your fasting. Again, with Eat Stop Eat, we're only talking about a 24-hour fast, so you should be able to do a very, very effective one and a half hour weight training program right in the middle of a fast without any ill effects. Similarly, obviously, on the days you're not fasting, you should be able to do it too. So a nice, simple program that'll maintain muscle mass that you enjoy doing, that's perfect.
So let's talk a little bit more about supplements, because I think, like I mentioned before, I think you have a really interesting history in the supplement industry.
Yeah.
Do you have any interesting stories about the production or sales of supplements? I don't know if you have, like, any, you know, dark, horrible stories. Like, we had Scott Abel on in the past, and he had some
right.
kind of dark stories. So I don't know if you had any yourself.
You know, the weird thing about the supplement industry is it's very, well, obviously it's a super fast-moving, high-stress industry. But the two sides of supplements, the marketing and sales and promotion side, and the research side, they get together kind of at the end to put a product together. But the side I saw was a pretty cool side, because I was involved with one of the larger companies who did do research, and I was fairly sheltered, I think, to the marketing and advertising side of it, but I did see the really cool research side of it. So on the sort of top, right before I was leaving the industry, I spent a lot of time traveling. I mean, I was in England and Scotland and China and all throughout the States meeting really cool people. So I have fun stories, but I don't really have the scary stories as some people do. The research is phenomenal. Meeting with the people who do supplement research is also very interesting, because you tend to think that everybody thinks like us, and especially if you're stuck in the bodybuilding industry for a long period of time, you know, obviously everybody wants to be 230, 240 and shredded, right? But then when you go overseas and you're in Scotland and England, you realize that it's not actually what they want in any way. You start realizing that bodybuilding and having an ideal body or low body fat means so many different things to different people. And that was sort of the best part of it. Different people's ideas of what a supplement would be, the different regulations around the world in terms of, you know, things that we can easily sell in North America that we absolutely cannot sell, you know, in Italy. I found that amazing too. But the funny stories, there weren't that many. The industry is full of definitely personalities and really good guys. The sort of stories of it being full of sharks and you know, evil people mixing supplements up in their bathtubs, there's probably an ounce of truth to that. But I also saw a lot of people who just were fresh out of school, loved bodybuilding, loved the idea of fat loss, and loved being in the industry. So it was it was an experience you can't really replace. I don't think you could just stay in school and do a PhD and then a postdoc and get that kind of experience or that that amount of exposure to things that were going on. Obviously, hanging out with bodybuilders, not people working in the industry, but actual true bodybuilders, you see some pretty freaky things. So it's stuff you'd never see in a lab. Most of these people, you'd never get into a study. And that's the cool part, is being able to meet with people who are, and I'm not saying this in a negative sense at all, but true freaks of nature. And you don't see them in an exercise phys lab. But when, you know, you get a Ronnie Coleman or a Jay Cutler walking through the door, it's amazing. It's a, you know, true testament to the absolute variability in the human body. You know, you have me at 5'10"-ish, 180 pounds, standing beside a Ronnie Coleman or a Jay Cutler who's probably as thick as I am wide. It's an amazing thing to see. So I love my time in the industry. It really sort of opened my eyes to a wide variety of different styles of training and eating and approaches to research.
Just one another question on supplements. We always usually ask our guests, like, what are their best bang for their buck supplements, the things that they tend to recommend for their clients and things that, you know, have been proven. Like, what are the typical supplements that you would recommend to the listeners out there just in general?
Yeah. Okay. So for me, I mean, being in the industry and then out of it, I see the value in a supplement is its convenience. For instance, a protein powder for people who feel though they need to take more protein, you can carry around grilled chicken breasts in a Tupperware container and be that guy or be that girl, you know, who's pulling out a chicken breast. And then, by the way, a refrigerated chicken breast does not smell nice when you open up that Tupperware container. It's just brutal. So, and then you're searching around looking for a microwave. So the key to supplements is really the convenience they provide. And it really comes down to the meal replacement and the protein powder, that if it's something you want in your life that makes it easier for you, then I have absolutely no problems and would feel comfortable recommending those for those types of people. Me, I love cooking and I love my time in the kitchen, so I'd never replace food with a supplement. But if I was on a, you know, hectic sales job where I'm on the go for 14 hours a day and I had to choose between, you know, a meal replacement or fast food every day of the week, I could see meal replacements being very useful.
All right, Brad, I think that will wrap it up for us here. Again, where can people get the book and where can they get some more information on you? I know you do have a blog.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to check out the book, it's eatstopeat.com. But if you want to check out sort of me and my nutritional philosophies first and kind of get to know the theory behind the book, you can go to bradpilon.com. That's Brad and then Pilon, PILON.com. And that's my blog with all my sort of nutrition info in it.
Great. Now, I said your name wrong at the beginning of the show, and I feel like
you know
a
what?
Horrible
it's,
person.
For a five-letter word, it's one that gets messed up all the time. Don't worry about it.
Thanks again, Brad. Everyone, check out those websites. We'll throw them in the show notes as well. Again, check the website out, eatstopeat.com. Brad, thanks a lot, and we hope to have you on again in the future.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.